Welcome, everyone. I'm going to call tonight's meeting to order, the August 7th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. And will you please rise and say the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible.
I'd ask to call the roll call, members.
Ms. Robertson has asked to be excused. Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you, Kathy. So our first order of business is a proclamation, and I would like to call up Leslyn McBean Claiborne to read the proclamation for us. And I'd love to ask Kirby Edmonds, the Dorothy Cotton Senior Fellow and Program Coordinator, to come receive the proclamation.
Thank you, Anna. I am very happy to read this proclamation from the entire Tompkins County Legislature. Proclamation honoring the life and legacy of Dr. Dorothy F. Cotton. Whereas the history of Tompkins County is rich and vibrant because of the contributions and accomplishments of the people who call Tompkins County home, and whereas one such revered and celebrated resident is the late Dr. Dorothy Foreman Cotton. And whereas Dorothy Cotton, as a young college student, understood the struggles of poverty, racism, and inequality, and positioned herself to challenge those struggles from a grassroots level because she was a relentless advocate of the notion that movements are built not by leaders, but by those at the bottom, at the grassroots level. And whereas Dorothy Cotton became a prominent leader in the human and civil rights movement from the 1960s and through the end of her life, being the highest-ranking female member in the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the SCLC, as director of the Citizenship Education Program, the CEP, during the height of the civil rights struggle in the South, and whereas through her work with CEP, Dorothy Cotton taught literacy, citizenship, and nonviolent protest tactics, and motivated others to become registered voters and to actively engage in politics, all to ensure that Black people knew their history and how to become empowered economically. And whereas Dorothy Cotton traveled throughout the South, conducting education programs and marching in protest with an elite and steadfast group of friends and partners in the civil rights movement, including the Honorable Andrew Young, Septima Clark, and the incomparable Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whom she accompanied to Norway in 1964 to accept his Nobel Peace Prize. And whereas, following her retirement from SCLC in 1968, working in former President Carter's administration as a regional director for an agency for volunteer programs, and serving as vice president for field operations at the King Center in Atlanta, Dorothy Cotton moved to Ithaca to work at Cornell University as Director of Student Activities. And whereas, since she couldn't shake off the fight for civil rights, Dorothy Cotton returned to that work, conducting seminars and workshops on leadership development and social change, and helping people understand that they have what it takes to bring about a new order. And whereas during that time, she helped found the National Citizenship School, published her memoir, If Your Back's Not Bent, The Role of the Citizenship Education Program in the Civil Rights Movement, and saw the establishment of the Dorothy Cotton Institute, DCI, and the Dorothy Cotton Jubilee Singers right here in Tompkins County in honor of her work to promote human rights. And whereas, as part of the DCI, Dorothy Cotton joined others and traveled to Palestine to witness the occupation of Palestine and to stand in solidarity with the citizens of the West Bank against the unequal treatment to which they had been subjected, reporting that often she led the group in freedom songs at times when people were feeling sad and downtrodden. Dorothy would lift their strengths with freedom songs. And whereas Dorothy Cotton's charm, eloquence, sharp wit, and masterful intelligence was often punctuated by song, one of her favorites being, "We are building up a new world. Builders must be strong." And would command attention and respect while drawing others in to join the movement and find their strength. And whereas honors awarded to Dorothy Cotton's work, included honorary degrees, doctorate degrees from the University of New England, Spelman College, and the University of New Rochelle. And whereas we in Tompkins County have been blessed and honored to have been able to share in Dr. Cotton's wisdom, teachings, love, and support, an act made most significant after her passing away on June 10, 2011. Now, therefore be it resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature celebrate with the highest regard the life of Dr. Dorothy Foreman Cotton and acknowledge her legacy of unyielding service to humanity. Resolved further that the legislature expresses its members' admiration for the seriousness and devotion, and this is in quotes, with which she held her noble charge. Words that she said to Dr. King in a telegram acknowledging his nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize. Resolved further that on this day, we urge all Tompkins County residents to remember the many contributions Dr. Dorothy Foreman Cotton made to the civil rights movement and to the cause of social justice and equality here in Tompkins County. Work that inspired hope, justice, and revived love for humanity in our hearts, not just locally, but across the nation and around the world. And it is signed this 7th day of August, 2018, by our Honorable Vice Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, Anna Kellis. Thank you.
I am very pleased and honored to accept this proclamation on behalf of Dorothy, who passed last month. I agree with every word. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kirby. And while I'm here, just real quick, thank you all for allowing this to happen. We cannot have people like Dr. Cotton move on to be with the ancestors and not acknowledge the amazing contribution that she's made not only to us locally but to people throughout this world. On Sunday, if you hadn't heard, there's a celebration of her life at Bailey Hall on Cornell University campus, and there are tickets. I don't know if there are any available. It's free, but you have to have a ticket. And so we do Saturday. Oh, good Lord. Saturday. Thank you. 2 p.m. And so I do encourage you to go if you can and show honor to this incredible, incredible woman. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leslyn.
And thank you to Kirby and the Dorothy Cotton Institute. I understand that they might have actually sold out of those tickets or don't have any more, but I encourage everyone to check with the Dorothy Cotton Institute, the office. They may have a few more left. There, that could have been a rumor, so do it now if you want to go. So I'm going to move to the privilege of the floor. We don't have any blue cards, so I'm going to move directly to the privilege of municipal officials. I see we have one in. Oh, did you want to also speak on? If you could bring up a blue card, that would be wonderful. So while you're filling that out, I'm going to read to the public the rules that are here. These are the rules for speaking under privilege of the floor, that you agree to a 3-minute time limit, you agree not to raise your voice, you agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace, you agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. And after 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. Finally, you agree that if you cause a disruption, you may be asked to leave, and you will leave the chambers. So if you bring your blue card up, I would be happy to introduce you. Welcome. Absolutely. If I could read it. Kelsey and Jennifer. So, two separate. You want to take it? That's fine.
We're going to just do it.
So, I have Kelsey and Joe Fion.
Fiore. That's okay. So my name is Kelsey Fiore. This is my husband, Joe. We are residents here in Ithaca. We also both work for Nexamp, which is a community solar company. We just completed construction on a project in Newfields that is a 7.5-megawatt community solar array. This is something that I've been getting the word out to among local municipal officials, towns and villages and cities in Tompkins County and the rest of the service area that the project serves. But it's something that I really just wanted to bring to your attention to elevate to the county level, that this is a project that we just finished construction on and that we are currently subscribing residents to. My husband's going to get into the details of our project, but I wanted to just say that this is a really wonderful opportunity for residents in the area. 80% of folks can't participate in on-site solar, either because they don't own property, they might be a renter, or they have too much shade, or they simply can't make the investment or don't want to make the investment. Community shared solar is an opportunity for those folks to still participate in solar and still realize the benefits of clean energy without putting anything on their property. So it's a great way to save a little bit of money on your electricity costs and to take a bit of control over your electricity costs and also be supporting a clean project and locally sourced energy.
I'll just is that it?
Mm-hmm. You have each have 3 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Today you have 10 minutes.
No. I think I'll be even faster than that. So I think the only thing I'd like to add is that, you know, these policies, the reason that we're able to develop community solar projects is, you know, in large part due to the fact that the cost of solar has come down substantially, and on a utility scale basis, we're really competitive with fossil fuels head to head. But also New York State and Utilities Commission, along with NYSERDA, has allowed for this framework in place to develop these community solar projects. But they really are only successful if you can get community support and engage local municipalities, residents, advocacy groups to sign on. And we've gotten local support at the town level, and the project is fully constructed, but now we need to sign up customers. And we have, you know, several hundred that have joined already, and now the ask is to see if we can continue that success and identify additional customers to sign on. It's a 10% discount off your electric bill, and it's a way to, again, support a local source of clean energy, which we know this county is supportive of.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Unless there is anyone else, I am going to call George. If you would like to join us and give us a report for the city, that would be wonderful.
Hello. Thanks for having me here again. The City Common Council did not meet in the month of August, so I don't have anything really prepared other than a few road construction updates. The NYSEG project on Upper East State Street is finished, so there's no detour at Upper East State Street anymore. The Lower East State Street project, which is a city project, is still underway, the new sewer line. It's not that difficult to get through there, though. Another project you may not be aware of that's about to begin is at the base of Stone Quarry Road, the intersection of Stone Quarry and Spencer Road. Spencer Road is going to be dead-ended on the 400 block, so there will no longer be a shortcut from Stone Quarry through to the corner by Wilcox Tire or to all the stores that people often shortcut to. I think this is a really good project because it was extremely dangerous for the people living on the 400 block of Spencer Road to even cross the street to check their mail. And there's a lot of children on that block. And people will, coming down the hill on Stone Quarry, will have to go out to the roundabout, the traffic circle. And people who are unaware, who come the other direction, will find themselves in Danby before they can turn around the first time. So if people in Danby, you'll have lots of new people to wave at.
You might want to put a big sign out in the circle, do not go this way if you want to.
I'm sure it will do something. Yeah, but I'm sure people will still do it out of habit. And, of course, as you know, the construction on the new configuration on West State Street and the bridge on Route 79 is in full swing, and everybody's real cheerful and happy about it. It's making progress. They took down the barriers that were protecting the sidewalk construction, so progress is being made. We'll see what it looks like at the end.
Thank you, George. Any questions? I had one question about the development, Green Street Garage development. Can you give us a little bit of an update?
I think four proposals have been made, but the city hasn't really started looking at it. Common Council certainly hasn't started looking at it yet. And like I said, we didn't have a meeting this month. They may be talking about it tomorrow at the Planning and Development Committee.
So So as I understand it, IURA's next meeting is on the 21st. I'm not sure of the time exactly, but all four developers will be presenting their proposals during that meeting. Is that correct?
Well, you know more about it than I do then.
Well, I think that is the case. All right. If anybody wants to go, it's now publicly announced.
Okay.
Thank you, George.
Yep.
So I'm going to move us to special topic presentations. We do have a presentation tonight, actually. We recently, at a previous legislative meeting, got an update on the funding opportunities for the airport. That is moving fast and furious. Deadlines are coming and going quickly. So we may actually experience regular updates. This is the second one from Director Mike Hall, who's going to come and give us an update on some of the funding updates that have happened. And I also want to call Commissioner Katie Borghella, Commissioner of the Department of Planning and Sustainability, to talk a bit about the relationship with NYSEG and power happening there. As many of you guys know, Martha has spoken about this previously. Some of us went to a meeting in Albany with NYSERDA and NYSEG. Some of the things we learned were that there is no reliability issue. That was a report out that NYSEG made, which was a wonderful thing to hear. The second is that they will be issuing a second RFP for alternatives to the pipeline, and that we will hopefully be getting an update soon. And the third is that there are direct conversations now, because there was a proposal put in for the airport, and there are direct talks between the airport and NYSEG for power opportunities. And Katie will help us understand a little bit of that and get an update. So if you both could join us, that would be wonderful.
Can I just give you a little introduction while they're getting set up?
Yes.
So part of, and Michael will talk a little bit more about it, you know, this project is moving fast, and the state is the one that's dictating the timelines as to how fast this moves. And Michael will talk a little bit about the speed of which the state is moving with this project, which is nonetheless change deadlines, change targets on a regular basis. Since we've got several balls in the air, so to speak, with funding, we meet now weekly, every Monday, to kind of track the state project, the construction elements of it, to talk about the different federal aid elements that Mike's going to get into, and then also Katie's work with NYSEG and NYPA, just because of the speed at which this is moving and the complexities that it's all handling. So, Mike,
Jason, could you go over that again? With those things going up and down, we can't hear.
Sure. What I was just saying is the state is controlling this project and the timeline and the speed at which it moves, which is very fast. Mike meets with them or has a conference call with them weekly. Following that, Katie and Mike and I meet weekly to keep tabs on to where the construction project's going, federal aid opportunities, which Mike will talk about, and the NYSEG NYPA opportunities for financing. Since we have, you know, to a certain extent, an $8 million gap we're trying to fill with this project as we're doing the project. It's a little abnormal to have this promptness and quickness with the state, but it's well-received, and they'll get the project across the finish line that much quicker. But from a complexity perspective, it adds for challenges with communication internally to make sure everybody's informed on a consistent basis, which is why we're meeting on a weekly basis, just to keep informed. And I'll relay a lot of those updates to you following those meetings so that you're informed as things come out and changes happen with the project. But I'll turn it over to Mike and Katie.
Okay, thanks, Jason. And you know, certainly apologize that some of you got blindsided by some things that have happened. The pace has been pretty terrific since the governor made his announcement. And so I've got a few slides to run through, and Katie will amplify one of the funding sources, and then subject to any questions that you have. Added a line to our welcome for the airport. We celebrate your music. The airport is going to sponsor the Cuca Chamber Orchestra this year, and in exchange for that sponsorship have asked the orchestra to reach out to youth in our community, particularly disadvantaged youth, to try to bring them into the wonders that activity and music can bring to their lives. Quickly, these are the requirements that you've seen before. Nothing has changed there, nor will it in the months ahead, but it leads to a very complex management situation, particularly when the state is extraordinarily timeline conscious in our project. And as Jason said, we talk to them on a weekly basis at a high level of granularity or detail to make sure that we're getting where we need to go on time. We told you that previously that the project as proposed 2 years ago was a $22 million project. We figured in some inflation, both formally and informally, and figure we're around $24.5 million. As proposed, we were about $8 million short. As we arrive in 2018, we're about $10.5 million short of our current estimate. However, you'll recall that we have in hand $2.5 million. So that brings the overall balance of monies that we still need to find down in the $8 million range. And listed on the right side of the chart are potential sources of those monies. Just as a reminder, this is where we're going. The upper left side of this picture is the ticket counter baggage makeup area. That's kind of like puffing up your cheeks. And then if you stick your tongue out, the concourse that will have the jet bridges installed is familiar, and then the cleanup on the project is parking lots and customs facility. So we broke this project into three parts. We had to because there was insufficient time between the award and construction for us to do the whole project as one package. I do have, we're talking about updating you and trying to get everybody on the same page. Well, the latest update is, as of this morning, the state has secured the funds, and there's an approximately 60-day turnaround, but we can now begin to claim funds against this project. So Rick is feeling much better this evening. So that's actually one of the many milestones, but a very important one. So we started off with phase one. Maybe when I briefed you earlier, we talked about building the concourse first. But in fact, what we did was we looked at the entire $24.5 million project, and we picked out those things that were eligible for federal funds. It's under the Airport Improvement Program, very specific things that you can seek reimbursement from the federal government for, or seek funding from the federal government for, not reimbursement. That became the core of phase one, which became essentially the part of the terminal where you stand at the counter or where your bags are made up. CNS has been working 7 days a week, 16-hour days on this since the award. And for the award to be submitted to the feds, we had to have gone through a bid cycle. So where we are in phase one right now is we had a bid opening last Friday, and our proposal to the feds is due tomorrow. That'll give you a sense of how little slack there is in the timeline here. We will meet that gate, and of the roughly $8 million for phase one, each of the phases is give or take $8 million. The phase one money, $500,000 of that, is eligible for federal consideration. There are two potential sources of federal money. One is year-end money. The federal fiscal year ends at the end of September, and any unobligated funds are reprogrammed at the end of the federal fiscal year. In addition, the administration in Washington has promised $1 billion for airport infrastructure. The terms of that opportunity have just been released, but it's another thing that will, in our case, is a potential source for that $5 million ask. So the money, the request that's going in tomorrow has two potential federal funding sources: year-end money redistributed and a special grant program that is just rolling out.
Mike, just to clarify, that was $5 million, correct?
What did I say?
You said $500,000.
Yeah, it's $5 million. I've done that before. So basically, $8 million total in phase one, potentially $5 million back from the feds. And remember that our bogey is $8 million total. We've also said that the reasonable bonding limit to be paid for with passenger facility charges is $3 million. So, for example, if we got five from the feds and bonded three, we'd have made up the gap. But there are better ways, and I think fairer ways, to make up the gap than that. Right now, we got the bids last Friday. We are in the qualification phase, meaning you gave us a bid. Did you really include everything you were supposed to? Do you have good references? Is the money behind you? When we have completed that process, we'll be back before the F&I committee with a proposal for the county to accept the bid. You can expect that'll be sometime in August. But the huge time pressure's off, which is that we had to get this information into the feds tomorrow to be considered. Then we come to phase two. We're hoping that phase two will be advertised early in the fall. That means October. And both phase one and phase two are supposed to be complete next June. We could have advertised phase one and two together, except for the amount of work that's necessary to pull all this together and the fact that the governor is here fairly recently. The easy way to think about phase two is it's the concourse, and it includes the next exciting piece of business, which is geothermal. You'll recall that we put in a joint proposal with Cuga Solar asking NYSEG for $4 million from their no-pipe alternative project. And there was also an opportunity, it seemed, through the New York Power Authority, or NYPA. But it turns out that the NYPA opportunity was just a front for NYSERDA. And, in fact, by being part of the FlexTech program at NYSERDA, we're already under consideration, the same as we would have been if we came in through the NYPA entrance. And if that's hard to follow, you're not alone. But the bottom line is we have potential here for both New York State Electric and Gas, no pipe alternative in some shape or form, and for NYSERDA in some shape or form. I'm going to ask Katie now, because I can't do it, to see if she can bring us up to speed a little bit about the no-pipe alternative, which is of great interest to us both strategically in our community but also tactically with regard to the airport, because our project is mature, whereas some of this other stuff is ongoing. So, Katie, you've got the mic.
Sure. Thank you, Mike. I just wanted to let you all know that in these discussions with NYSEG and the Public Service Commission staff, called DPS staff, I've been trying to push the idea that we have a kind of a time-limited opportunity here to really be a game-changer right in the moratorium area, right across the street from the industrial park. What can we do? We need to not be bogged down in a second RFP. We don't have time for that. This is something that needs creative thinking applied to it quickly. And that seemed to get their interest. And so we actually next week have a meeting with a number of people from NYSEG at the highest levels and from NYSERDA, as well as the Public Service Commission staff, a bunch of them as well. And my hope is to try to kind of facilitate them kind of having a box around this project so that it's not interwoven with all of the other kind of noise that's going on, and see what we can do. If we can come up with something that's a win-win for everybody, it seems like it's just a great opportunity and something that we need to act on quickly. So that's the push that I've been doing kind of behind the scenes, and I'm happy to keep updating you all on progress. Hopefully we will see some progress come out of this meeting and future meetings.
I think the fact that Katie and Martha Robertson and others, Anna, who've been involved in this discussion, have gotten us to the point where they'll agree to sort of focus on this one aspect, which is terrific. The proposal that we put in conjunction with Cuba Solar is not interdependent, but rather sketched this broad concept of how solar power and conversion to ground source heat pumps in Tompkins County could be a real game changer. And we're probably now focused just on the geothermal. There is solar power available other places, as was mentioned earlier in the meeting this evening. We are committed to being solar. Exactly how we get there, you know, remains to be seen. Meantime, our immediate concern is getting support to make that conversion from gas to ground source heat pump. And Katie and her department have been terrific in helping us think this thing through. And the real bottom line here is that when all this happens, the operating cost of a terminal that's a third larger than the current terminal will be $50,000 a year less. So you can see in economic terms what this means, which is significant for our enterprise budget. But beyond that, we're creating a model home, in quotes, that can stand as a beacon to anyone in the community or the state or the nation that wants to see how a community can actually take steps to get to a strategic goal. And both the county and the state have a strategic goal several decades out of significant reduction in the use of hydrocarbon fuels and sustainable energy. So we're trying to make ourselves the model home that demonstrates that. In terms of gas relief, rough numbers, 7 businesses or 70 homes will be freed up by getting the terminal off. Those are numbers you can remember and deal with. It's significant. Phase three will be advertised early in 2019. It involves the solar panels in the parking lot and the building of a customs facility, which will be nearby the terminal. That customs facility will primarily serve what we call general aviation aircraft, principally business jets and small airplanes coming here for tourist reasons from Canada. The business jets obviously relates to Global Cornell, and that's the primary rationale behind creating the facility. However, by locating it next to the terminal, if we would in the future have an airline like Air Canada currently runs service from Toronto to Syracuse, if they were interested in coming to Ithaca with pre-cleared service, they could. Pre-cleared service is when you go through customs at the departure end in a friendly country or used to be friendly country like Canada, then you can come directly here. But you have to have a customs facility on the receiving end, not to process passengers, but just to be there in case something, you know, didn't go right. Okay, here's our timeline. I actually went through all of these. We're on time, and it's been a pretty incredible effort by a lot of people, including the state and you know, our county assistants, Katie's department in particular, and we appreciate you know, all that you've done to be supportive. It's a tough timeline for our government time cycle. Things are happening faster than we're set up to staff through committee and the legislature, but you've been very supportive. And again, I apologize. Sometimes a couple things happened that we didn't get to you beforehand. We're going to do our best to keep that from happening, but the pace is going to be pretty high through the end of the year. The one thing I want to draw attention to, actually, 3 dates. September 15th is Airport Day. It'd be kind of a nice opportunity. It's open to all of our county government departments if they want to have displays. Tommy will be on display. And the B-17 operated by the Experimental Aircraft Association will be here for 4 days, Thursday through Sunday, offering rides. I've had a lot of interest from, you know, veterans, people that had parents that the flu and what have you. September 29th, Tommy's first public flight. We did have a discussion about flying for the first time in front of the public based on my experience, and there will be a test flight prior. But 29th is when the public flight will take place. That's obviously very weather dependent. So that brings us to October 4th. There was interest on the part of the governor in a groundbreaking. We're on a very tight schedule to get to October 4th, but that's the date that we've identified, and the reason is that's the day that Washington service commences. There's a ribbon-cutting event in the terminal, so if the weather's not good, you're inside. It's a contained, contained crowd, if you will. So pencil in October 4th. We've also had Washington Airport Authority reach out to us with a $75,000 budget to promote Washington service. Some of that they're spending on their end. I suggested things like, you can't find another airport that's 20 minutes from a ski area. You could get on a jet Saturday morning in Washington and be skiing at Greek Peak in the afternoon. They're kind of interested in that, so we're getting Peggy Coleman and the CVB involved. But a certain portion of that total money is ours, and they want a social event, so we'll have a reception to commemorate the Washington service. United Airlines will come. Hopefully the governor will come that day. So October 4th is a big day for us. Everything's done by the end of the year. That's what we wind up with. So any questions you have for Katie or I, we'd be happy to try to answer them, and I appreciate the opportunity to sort of bring you up.
Thank you both for a great presentation. I want to start with questions. Mike, you want to go for the first?
The bid opening that was done on the 3rd, how many bidders did we get, and how, are we under our estimates?
We have three bidders. One is under, two are over, but they're all within a range where if we have to disqualify somebody based on their inability to demonstrate a standard on the contract, I would say there's a good chance that at least one of the three will qualify, probably all three will, in which case we're on budget.
Are they regional contractors or from far away, or where are they?
I guess that's public information. Rochester, Syracuse, and Elmira.
So, yeah. Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions? Ann?
Thank you, Katie and Mike, for the presentation. I'm glad to hear that the geothermal application with NYSEG is not dependent on getting the solar. So I appreciate you getting the solar at Cayuga Power Plant on the ash dump. So I appreciate you telling us about that. So my question is their application to put solar at Cayuga Power, are we still intertwined as far as those two being accepted together?
Well, I'd have to defer to Katie on that. I mean, if there's a new round, a new RFP, then it seems like it's a fresh start for everybody. We were rushed putting in an application. Very much intrigued by the idea that there might be a large-scale solar operation with the infrastructure to distribute the power that could relate to this project. But the purpose in our application, as I think Jerry Goodnow from Hero Power would say, and certainly I would say, was to put a concept out there that was supporting the strategic goals. Now, how each of us independently or together get to that depends on, a lot of things, including the ability to attract money to build a solar array and the ability to attract money to convert the terminal to geothermal. So they're related in concept, but not tied at the hip, so to speak. And especially if there's a round two, I don't know, Katie, if you have any sense of the appetite of NYSERDA for one part of the project or another.
I will say NYSERDA seemed particularly interested in the geothermal aspect since it is directly tied to natural gas. And also really I commend Mike and Jerry for putting together that application, because it does put a foot in the door for potentially some of this non-pipe alternative money. We don't know what that looks like yet, but having applied to the round one RFP was repeatedly mentioned as a really good positive thing, and it helps our case for potentially getting some funding.
Can I just ask a quick follow-up? Do you know how many kilowatts that we're needing per year or anything?
I'll get you that answer, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's not a huge amount more than what we're doing right now, but
we're probably a little bit more than the geothermal at my house. So
I hope so.
I would think so, Henry.
Mike, thank you for the presentation. Do you know how much leftover money is in the federal budget or budget?
No, we don't. We don't have any visibility on that. The federal government, let's just for purposes of illustration, the federal government says they're going to spend $10 million in a fiscal year on airport improvement. And that's dependent, because it's not reimbursable after the fact. It's dependent on people getting projects approved and hard numbers into the feds. So what happens is, for example, in this case, if it weren't for the extreme urgency and pressure from the state and otherwise, we probably wouldn't be ready for this fiscal year. But we may have been programmed as potentially available, and now all of a sudden 10% of the money is not obligatable within the fiscal year. And that's when somebody puts their hand up and says, well, wait a minute, I got a project. It's all set. I've got bids in and everything else. Fund mine. That's where we are. We've had really good luck in recent years, and we have a terrific relationship with the New York Airport's office. They're really trying to help us. So none of that really counts, except that I'm pretty optimistic that we'll be able to find some support because of their advocacy.
Okay. Timing-wise, when would you find out about the other federal money?
Well, the federal money, including year-end, all this is to be announced by September 30th, which is 7 weeks from now. So we're on a fast track toward decisions about, because they, in fact, they have to close their books about a week or 10 days before the 30th. So probably within about a month of knowing how we're going to do with that. That's on the year-end money. The administration money is critical to us, once again, because they don't reimburse. You've got to get their money up front. But that's spread over two fiscal years. So if they don't make a decision by 30 September, it doesn't particularly matter to them. So we'll see. Our best shot is under execution, which they've been doing a great job of recently. That you know, things aren't flowing well through Washington, so there's a better chance that, you know, that there might be some unintended money available at the end of the year.
Yes, one more question.
Yeah.
What's the status of the bus going to New Jersey?
The status of possible surface transportation being handled like an airplane hasn't advanced, other than for United Airlines to say they were interested in that possibility. TSA is not interested in that possibility. Mike Hall is very interested in that possibility. So it all falls on us to put a package together and run it up the flagpole, and you know, we'll get to it. In the meantime, our first objective with United Airlines is to go from 2X to 4X in the Washington service, which will undoubtedly work out much better than the Newark service because of the air traffic and weather issues. So that's our pressure at first. But we remain a New York-centric market, and there are people out there, not quite enough of them, but there are people that would like to fly to New York. Unfortunately, Newark may be as tough as any of the New York airports. Kennedy's a little bit better, but they're all stuck in this swarm of traffic and weather. And, you know, frankly, I went down there last week on business, and you're there on the bus just about as fast. So I think it's a good alternative for, again, thinking in the future, 10 years out or something. The other issue we face as a community is that the airplanes are getting bigger and bigger. because they figured out they can make a lot of money flying from New York to Los Angeles. And so lots of communities like us, even including Syracuse and Rochester and Albany, which are pretty good-sized markets, are facing an equipment challenge. And then, of course, we don't have enough pilots to fly the airplanes. For a lot of reasons, we need to mature this, and I'll be working on it. See what I can come up with.
Shauna.
Hi there. Thank you very much for the presentation. So just to confirm, the renovations will not be done before Election Day.
No. Which Election Day?
So there will
be a groundbreaking before Election Day.
Okay. My question was, you had mentioned that there's a max of $3 million bond. I was wondering if that could potentially be used just in phase one.
The number that we derived in conversations between committees and Jason and Rick and myself was that, you know, that the $3 million, we had a slide that showed how much it cost to carry that and how much we were likely to pick up from PFCs and what have you. That's sort of our fudge factor out there. Now, if we can get this project entirely funded, so much the better. And then we have the potential of bonding to do something else that maybe we haven't contemplated as part of this project. The fact is that, you need to think about roof replacement. Well, we aren't going to have to do that because we'll have a new roof on the terminal. But, you know, those kinds of things are, when somebody says, well, why should I support you because you can just bond for it, the answer is there's going to be plenty of stuff that we need to bond for to keep the facility up or add something in the way of additional service space. So that's our preference, but that's kind of our hip pocket thing. Now, if we have to go above three, we said in the previous presentation that eight was the gap, and if we had to do eight, we could probably swing eight, but we don't want to go there. That's way too far leveraged for my comfort level. So that's kind of where we are. That's our fudge factor. Yep.
One of the things that you said earlier was the seven businesses or 70 homes worth of gas freed up, which I appreciate giving us that analogy so that we can keep it in mind. The one thing, though, that I keep coming to is the alternatives to the pipeline project that we're working on with NYSEG and the RFP process. At least what I've seen in going to the meetings, ideally, is to create ideas and mechanisms and technology to pull the homes and residential facilities off the grid so that a lot of that gas can be freed up for the industrial and the economic development engines in that area, which would be ideal. And I think everybody on both sides of the party divide seem to be very much in support of that. So I like the idea of the seven businesses that you outlined there that could be very useful to the Lansing area. So I appreciate that. I did have one question. If you could go back to the slide where you had the numbers, in parentheses you had the cost, this one. In the last presentation that you did, you had shown us for the phases the different buckets of potential funding that we could get. And if I recall, it was up to maybe $8 million, correct. And so I'm trying to rectify in my mind those two slides. If you go back to the one that you were just on with the yellow, in each one it said, I think in the first one, max of $5 million out of $8 million. The second was
so when we broke it out by phases, yeah, if you go back two slides to where we were, there was potentially $10 million worth of asks out there to various potential funding sources. Now when you break it out by phases, the one source that goes away in September, because our project will be passed and the feds can't reimburse, and it will be a different fiscal year with awards 9 months out. So the one that's really hanging fire right now is this phase one, and that's why we did phase one. Let's say we get $5 million from the feds. Now our total ask remaining is five, and we need
three. So if we were to get the $5 million of federal funding, we've now taken that gap from eight down to $3 million.
Right.
And we potentially have identified $4 million through NYSERDA and NYSEG.
and $8 million in phase three. So we will have, we only need $3 million out of the potential $12 million that will still be available to us over the next two phases.
No, after that. What would still be available to us would be a little over $5 million in asks, and we would need three out of the five.
Right, so I was looking here at phase two, it says 4 out of 8, and phase three it says 8. Approximately 8. That's where I got the 12.
Yeah, well, the 4 is because that's what we asked for under the no-pipe RFP. Okay. What we would really, and I don't want to get into too much into these numbers. We're going to have our meeting next week. So I'd like $4 million for geothermal because I think it's going to cost most of that to do it.
Got it. That makes sense.
And I think there are interested parties who have the ability to help with this, and it will serve their interest when they do it as opposed to us doing it and them piggybacking.
Thank you for the clarification. Wonderful. Thank you both so much for giving us this update. I'm sure we will see you again soon for the next update for the airport. Yeah. I'm going to give it a second to raise the screen so I'm not talking over it. So I do not have a chair's report from the chair, and we do not have any chair appointments, so I'm going to move straight to Jason.
Thank you. Excuse me, are we going to have privilege on the floor for the members of the legislature?
I skipped right over you all. Thank you so much, Mike. I may have done it unconsciously.
The small people.
I was going to get us out of here by 7:15. Privilege of the legislature. Does anyone want to offer something, including me, actually? Deborah.
I just wanted to tell everyone that the local WENY channel will be on the air starting August 30th. I think that their programming will be a little slim at the beginning, but they met with Martha and Marcia and I on the other day, and we gave them a lot of leads for content, and they really seem committed to making this thing work. So congratulations to everyone. I think we're all winners.
So are they taking requests? We can all send them TV show requests.
You can try. They cannot carry current network programming, but that I think is the only restriction.
It's good to know. Thank you so much, Deborah. Any other privilege of the floor from legislature comments? Anne?
I just want to thank NXIVM. You guys came to another meeting I was at. I don't know if it was Trumansburg or Town of Ulysses. So I just want to appreciate that you're going around and talking with folks and letting them know about the opportunity to get solar locally, and also that it saves 10% off your electricity bill. So if you haven't signed up for solar from somewhere like that, so please sign up.
Mike?
Two things. On everyone's desk was a copy of The Language of War. And this was something that the Civil War Commission, which existed for 5 years, did as one of its activities. It was written by our county historian, Carol Kamen, and it's actually done as a reading, and we went around the county and read this, and it was very well received. I think we were in almost all of the towns, along with places like Kendall and our Tompkins County Public Library and otherwise. It's taken from excerpts from letters, from newspaper articles. It gives you a taste of what was going on in Tompkins County during the Civil War. One of the last things the commission did was to authorize a little bit of money to have this published in a softcover edition, and this will be distributed to libraries around the county and other historical areas and things, so it'll be out there. But the commission wanted each of you to have a copy of it as well.
Thank you so much, Mike. You said you had two
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to talk about is we attend our meetings. We attend this meeting. We attend committee meetings and other things. And our wonderful staff of our legislature keeps track of when we come and when we don't. And the rule is that if you don't come, you are excused. But the question has always been, you know, what is an excuse that ought to be valid for missing a meeting, a committee meeting, for example? A while back in June, Dan Klein called me and said that he wanted to be excused from the Budget and Personnel Committee meeting. And I was thinking about this, and I said to Dan, Dan, you know, do you need an excuse? You need some kind of an excuse for this. What are you going to be doing that you can't to come to our meeting? And he said he was going to go visit his mother, of all things. And I said, well, bring me an excuse from your mother. A little while after that, I got a letter addressed to me from Mrs. Ruth Klein. And it says, Dear Chairperson Lane, please excuse my son, Danny Klein, from the June 12th Budget Capital and Personnel Committee. And it's signed by Mrs. Ruth Klein, in parentheses, Danny's mother. So I just want to set this out as an example for you all to think about in the future. Having a written excuse from your mom is always acceptable.
So Martha should be sending us all a letter from her children as of right. So. Thank you, Mike. Leslyn.
Only you, Dan. Only you. That is classic. But in all seriousness, Mike, thank you for sharing that. I know often there's just so much that we are engaged and involved in, and sometimes it feels like your life is not your own. I was just sharing with Amanda last night, who gave me a ride home, that I am going to be advertising for two husbands, four wives, few housekeepers, and I don't know what else.
A cook, definitely.
Dog walker, a cook, you know, a few other things. And when you miss a meeting, I mean, people don't just miss meetings for frivolous reasons. They're usually very legitimate and meaningful reasons for why somebody is not here. And I just recall, you know, when the Ithaca Journal publishes, you know, what did people miss and what people have missed, the year that my mother passed and how hard that was for me, because it's me, you know, doing everything. And everybody deals with stuff differently. And having to miss meetings to take care of everything that had to do with her. And then you get this thing, and nobody cares the reason why. It's just like you missed two meetings in a row, and you are just a bad person. And it makes you feel so awful when you see those things. So we all take it seriously. If we're not, we call each other up, and we want to know what's going on. But people do put a lot of time and effort into making this work and representing well. So thank you, Dan, for setting the standard of getting excuses from, I don't know who I'll get mine from, but I'll work on it. My mother writes an excuse to me, it's all over. Anyhow, I wanted to share very quickly, I think it was last year I came before this body and shared with you that a community leaders of color and others have been working with our very own Tompkins Cortland Community College and the College Foundation to start a scholarship program for African, Latino, Asian, Native American potential students who were interested in treatment services. We had found that within Tompkins County, there was no one who represented those populations that was engaged in treatment services and in really drug counseling, that kind of stuff. So we started this scholarship session. We've had four people matriculating through TC3 with a commitment to be working in Tompkins County as long as there are openings. And we're fortunate, again, with the help of the Park Foundation, to be able to offer this scholarship, again, for folks who might be interested in getting into TC3 come January. So we have an information session on Thursday, September 13th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Cultivare. And I want to make sure that I share with you, so you can share with any constituents who fit this criteria, as well as for the public to know about it. And Kelsey, I'll bring you over a little flyer so you can have the information as well. But we do want to encourage people to apply and consider this kind of work here in Tompkins County. I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Anyone else? I will then finish with another another comment, shout out to the women who will be swimming this Saturday, women swimming. I will be joining. We start at around 6 in the morning. We have one wave that is out on the boat by 6:30. They'll be in the water by latest 7, usually 6:40. Second wave gets in. All of us are usually on the west shore by 9 in the morning, brought in by music and cheers and breakfast from CTV, catered by CTV, which is always deeply appreciated. I know that they are still looking for volunteers, though, so if anybody is interested in getting up really early and seeing the sunrise with all of us swimming across the lake, I would personally very much appreciate it. It all goes to HospiCare, and none of it is used for administrative costs. All of it is used to support people who need their services, so that everyone can get their services, whether or not they have the ability to pay or to the extent they have the ability to pay. The other event that actually is coming up, which I think I am silly enough also to have signed up for, is the bike ride around the lake, which is September 8th, and that is the AIDS ride, and I have not started training. So if anybody is also silly enough to want to go with me, I will be start training tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock in the morning. So that is the AIDS ride, and that is to benefit the Southern Tier AIDS program, work, outreach, programming, research that they've been doing in the community. Extremely important, always needed, very much appreciated. So that will be September 8th, and they are also looking for volunteers. So if you want to donate to my page, I'm still collecting. And that is at womenswomen.org. You just look for my name. And that's the last one I have. So now I will move to you, Jason, for try number 2. Thank you so much, Mike, for bringing that to my attention.
Thank you. All I have to report is I believe in your mailboxes you received a copy of a presentation, a summary of the 2008 workplace survey results. We had an introduction meeting last week. There was a meeting with the oversight team as well as an open meeting to staff. And it is also, I believe, now linked on the website. So if you want to see the presentation given by the consultant, it's also on the website. Overall, it was a good review. This gives you a snapshot. Doesn't give you all the exact data, but gives you a snapshot and overview of the different categories of the survey. In general, I think there was some very good growth from 2015 to 2018, and some areas had some significant growth, and over 15 points in certain areas. They consider 5-point growth to be significant, which is very positive. It does also provide opportunities for growth, which I think are also very important to understand and recognize. The next stages for us are several parallel tracks. One is to get a meeting together with the legislature as well as with the department heads to break out into some focus groups, kind of process all the information, and identify some underlying themes to give back to the implementation team. That team will also begin in the next few months to meet, to understand process, and then start to develop a little bit of a strategic plan as to what they're going to seek out. Also at that time frame in September and October, I will be going around along with the education and outreach group and Amy Hendricks and be presenting the summary of this presentation with the intent of trying to get to every single employee so they have the ability to hear at least an overview from us. And that will probably lead us into close to Christmas time or towards the end of the year. At that point, from somewhere around that time, we'll have getting into the information. We'll get a little bit more into the details, and we'll start to probably break out into some different focus groups that will start to do some hands-on work on some of the elements that have been identified. some of the overarching, I think, summaries, and I know, Leslin, you were there. Please, you know, jump in at any point, as well as Shauna, you were present as well. Some, I think, three or four of the areas that I think will ultimately result in some level of planning and some level of execution. Leadership development program, there seemed to be some continued focus on how do we develop our leaders, what does it mean to be a leader in this county in terms of in the organization, and what type of skill training and training do we have behind it, developing our leaders. Diversity and inclusion training program, having more training around diversity and inclusion to help support the leadership development. Performance evaluations was a big key piece to identify it of wanting to have a consistent system of performance evaluations in the organization and having them, you know, on a consistent basis. And department head mentorship, which falls under Amy and my auspice, as well as the leadership and what type of department leadership and mentorship are we granting. So those are some of the four what I found themes in it that I think were identified by Kaleidoscope. And I thought overall it was a good summary discussion, 30,000-foot level discussion, and now we'll get into bringing that around to the departments, bring the implementation team into the discussion, bring the legislature into the discussion to identify key areas, and then trying to roll something out into next year.
Jason, can you tell us the makeup of the implementation team, the putting together of the implementation team, what that is?
The implementation team is a cross-section of the organization. So you've got members of the organization from all spectrums, both rank and file, middle line supervisor, and department heads. So we're still putting it together. But I think it was important to have a cross-section representation of all different types of employees in different job categories to be represented in that group, as well as makeup. So we're still trying to put that together and finalize it.
Great, thanks. Okay. Leslin?
So one of the things that we ask our the vendor to do is do sort of a comparison of our 2015, where we were, what it looked like, and then this new survey, you know, was there any growth? All the same categories, pretty much. And overall, what we saw is a higher level of positive response in most of the categories. There are, you know, a couple of them that were stagnant, and so we want to pay attention to those. But for the most part, we saw responses that said the organization was moving in the right direction relative to all the categories that Jason mentioned. I want to emphasize that one of the things around training, diversity and inclusion training, was not so much a lack of doing training, but more or less the word mandatory stood out. Is that they were recommending, as much as we're able to have mandatory trainings, because you have trainings and almost the same people go over and over again, and it's making a difference for sure, but we'd love to see more people engaged and taking advantage of those opportunities and then bringing those ideas and processes back into play within the organization. But we were pretty pleased in seeing some of the growth as we compare one year to the next.
And Leslin, the diversity and inclusion, they were assessed separately, were they not?
Yes.
And can you describe the difference in the performance?
So inclusion, I think, more or less, we saw improvement. It was an area, it's actually in my desk drawer, but it is an area that, you know, they spoke a lot about wanting to continue to do that work. Diversity, yes, improvement, but they also acknowledged that we are in an organization that is not very diverse when it comes to race or ethnicity, or sometimes even economic status. And so with the diversity looked like it was, you know, high ranking, it's pretty much because we have, you know, people of the same mindset who are answering the questions around that. So one of the areas focus for us to focus on is there diversity in terms of actual physical, what folks look like, et cetera, and what they represent is representative of what's in our county, what our county demographics say. Because then we might get different answers. But if we have a majority of the 70% of the folks who respond are people who are in one category, then obviously they answer those questions that way. So that's, you know, that was sort of an outlier there that we needed to pay attention to.
Thank you. Do you have anything else, Jason?
The only thing I have to add, and they both left, I think, but, I just want to praise again, you know, the key components of this airport project are relationships that both Mike and Katie have developed and continue to maintain. You know, Mike is balancing relationships with the Department of Transportation, Federal Aviation, FAA, DOT, that state and federal, two differences. He maintains those relationships part, you know, because that's a big part of making the project work smoothly. Katie has relationships at the state level, and there's relationships with the local level as well in terms of whether it's the local municipality or the residents that have or will have concerns and questions. And a lot of our conversation on Monday is ensuring that we maintain strong communication with those partners, ensuring that the relationships are preserved. And both of them, I think, as you know, are stellar at continuing to develop and keeping those relationships professional and communication open. They've done a phenomenal job. They continue to do a great job. And I just, I'm sorry they left, but I think it goes without saying that, you know, they're the reason the project is going to work smoothly. They understand the commitment to it, and they're doing a wonderful job. And we appreciate all the guidance and the support the legislature has given us to do that. But I just wanted to put that out there, that they're a big part of why that's going to work smoothly.
Thank you, Jason. Jonathan, do you have a report for us?
No, I'm going with the traditional mill report.
Thanks for bringing it back. Rick.
Thank you. I have a short sales tax update for you. If you turn to page 5 in your agenda, this is the end of the quarter, so you'll be getting monthly figures tonight for June and quarterly figures for the second quarter. You'll see on page 5 in that middle section, Mark County, that the county's portion of sales tax distributions for June was up 10.28% compared to last year. If you go over to the right-hand column where we're looking at the year-to-date distributions, you can see the county's portion totals $17,767,446 compared to $16,752,268 in the previous year. This represents an increase of $1,015,178 year over year, or 6.06%. And then in the second page, which shows the quarterly returns, in that midsection, you can see that in the quarterly view, sales tax distributions were up 8.95% comparing the second quarter of 2018 to the second quarter of 2017. And the percent for the second quarter being 8.95%, you can see where June's percentage was 10% roughly. The second quarter was 9% roughly. But the most important thing, and the thing that I confirm with the state, is the year-to-date percentage. And we did get their year-to-date report, and it did come into line with ours at about 6%. So we're about 6.06% year-to-date above where we were last year. The last comment I have to make is because oftentimes we're asking why is this happening and what is the primary driver. Well, I didn't do this research, but I did pull something from NYSAC that came out from their office about a week ago, and they said a considerable amount of information that explained the gas taxes or the gas sales being tremendously higher, mainly because of the price of gasoline. They said 16%, the gasoline was 16% higher in the first 6 months of 2018 compared to 2017. They forecast that for the rest of the year, 2018 will come in at about 14% higher for the year as in total over 2017. They also project that 2019 levels will be the same or similar to 2018 gas levels. How they know this, I don't know. But I'm just passing on to you what their forecasting and their modeling has given us on the gas sale. That, I think they spend this much time on it because it's probably the primary driver. And you know I brought that to your attention probably for the last year and a quarter, that our fuel prices were driving our sales tax. But there's four other areas that they've said here in New York that are other reasons why our sales tax could be higher. This is not specifically towards Tompkins County, but this is just looking at the economy as a whole. They said higher general inflation is one reason, positive consumer sentiment, higher take-home pay due to federal tax cuts, and continued growth in consumer credit. Those are the four things that they list as stronger receipts coming forth in our sales tax distribution.
We disagree? No, I'm just kidding. I didn't say anything. Good.
I would add one more thing that might be more impactful on your local economy is you have at least three major building construction projects going on right now, three cranes. You have some serious road construction projects. You know, that does have some positive impact and overspill, whether it's workers buying lunches, filling up gas, those types of things in your community. So the fact that you have construction, there is going to be spillover from that. That is going to help the economy as well.
Absolutely.
Particularly in sales tax.
So I'm actually going to switch up the agenda. We have one person who is waiting very, very patiently for a resolution to come forward. It's the only one that is not on consent agenda. So if everyone is okay with me bringing this forward so Jennifer Tavares can go home and have dinner, I would like to bring forward designation of Tourism Promotion Agency for State. This is the only one that is not on consent agenda. Quick call. At least it wasn't on mine. Yeah, it's not on consent agenda. And this is DAC ID 8004, and I was going to ask Vice Chair of PDEC, Amanda, to move this.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's in your red folder. Should be a yellow piece of paper.
You don't get yellow paper.
No, we didn't. I don't have a yellow piece in my
resume. Why don't you choose to get the yellow piece of paper?
Yes, the chairs always get the yellow. That's the only person who would get a yellow. You would have you would have it in your packet.
Okay, you said yellow, so I'm just.
I'm referring to Amanda as the one who would have a yellow copy in her red folder.
Okay. I mean, I have the piece of paper, but I don't see it on the agenda.
I see it as resolution number G on the consent agenda.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
There we go. Okay. I move that.
This was for Nick, who was here, who I am not seeing here. The one that actually yours is on consent agenda. It's Nick's that is not on consent agenda.
I was going to say, it's on consent agenda.
Yes,
I got you.
Okay. So we just have some communication on our end. So I'm going to go back to the consent agenda then, because Nick is not here, so I can't send Nick home, because he already left. Yep. So my first, actually, then I'm going to move to any resolutions to add or withdraw from the agenda.
Just have a question. Several of us are confused. Is everything on the consent agenda?
There is one thing that is not on the consent agenda.
Okay.
And that was just a mix-up between us about which PDEC
everything else
was not on the agenda. So I'm just going to read that, which is Resolution N. And that is the one referring to the algal blooms.
Thank you.
Correct. So there was just a mix-up between the two. So were there any withdrawals?
But that's off consent that I'm pulling it.
We're adding or withdrawing resolutions right now, and I think Resolution K needs to be withdrawn.
Yes.
From the agenda.
Okay. Thank you. I am withdrawing Resolution K.
Resolution K is withdrawn. So now I will move to the consent agenda that no longer has K. Unless you had a change. Okay. So I want to note that before I read the consent agenda, Resolution L there's a revised version, has small revisions, and that should be in the red folder, so it did not need to be pulled from the consent agenda. That was addressed in committee.
And that was what was passed through committee, so I just wanted to make sure everybody noted that they had that. The other was small revisions to the bylaws, and that is Resolution M. But also in your red packet, both of those should be. And then I'm going to go through the consent agenda, noting that those two changes are there. Dan.
So I'm just trying to clarify, so we're not pulling those from consent?
They're not being pulled from consent.
Okay,
I'm just noting, because those were the versions that passed through committee, they don't have to be pulled from the consent agenda. I'm just noting for you that you have them in your red folders as the revised versions that passed out of committee.
Thank you.
Yep. So reading through the consent agenda, we have two advisory board appointments. We have Jonathan Zisk, at-large representative for the Environmental Management Council. And for Youth Services Board, we have Jennifer Dean, Town of Groton, and Carlem Zavira Jimenez, and that is she's from the City of Ithaca representative. And those are both from Youth Services Board. From Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, we have Resolution A, authorization to apply for New York State assistance payment for farmland protection implementation project funding to hold a conservation easement on Jerry Dell Farm in the town of Dryden. That's ID 7978. Resolution B, award of 2018 strategic tourism implementation funding, and that's ID 7977. Resolution C, acceptance of snowmobile trail grant, and that's ID 7980. Also from PDEC agenda, Resolution D, authorizing 2018-3 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit TCAT and Tompkins County ID 7983. Resolution E, authorizing 2018-2 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant application for Tompkins County Consolidated Area Transit, TCAT, and Tompkins County. That's ID 7982. Resolution F, authorizing 2018-4 Federal Transit Administration Section 5339 Bus and Bus Facilities Grant Application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit, Inc., and that is ID 7981. G, designation of Tourism Promotion Agency for State, and that has passed through committee. That is ID 8004, and that is the one that was the mix-up. Jennifer, that is yours. From Facility and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution H, authorizing supplemental agreement number 7 and 8 with CNS companies for design and construction contract administration and full-time construction observation services for the Gate 2 passenger boarding bridge installation project, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 7971. Resolution I, final payment, bridge painting, Salmon Creek Road Bridge, BIN 3210100 over Salmon Creek, Town of Lansing, ID 7968. Resolution J, final payment, bridge reconstruction, Game Farm Road, BIN number 3209880 over Cascadilla Creek, Town of Ithaca, ID 7967. From the Government Operations Committee, we have Resolution L, and this is the amended version that was passed through committee in your red folder. Extend service contract with Town of Covert Assessment Function ID 7953. Also the bylaws that are in your red folder, the amended version for Resolution M. Creation.
We'd like to pull Resolution M, please.
Okay. Resolution M is pulled. And that is it for the consent agenda. Can I have someone move that? Deborah moves. Leslin seconds. All in favor? Any opposed? That is everyone in favor. And then I want to go to standing committee reports. The first is Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Typically, we would have the vice chair give a report. We have the vice chair was excused from this month's meeting, so I'm going to give a quick summary of what happened in Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee meeting.
We had a wonderful report from the Water Resource Council, and there were several long reports that were given to us about some of the work that they're doing. I'm happy to give anybody forward any of those reports. They talked about stormwater mapping and ditching practices, hydrilla, emerging contaminants, including microplastics, harmful algal blooms. So they're doing a tremendous amount of work. They talked for a while. We got the budget report from the Planning and Sustainability Department. That will obviously come up next month, so I'm not going to cover that. One of the things that I did want to point out, Deborah and I touched on it briefly, if I can find it very quickly, which I probably can't. So, Deborah, I'm going to ask you to follow up on what I'm saying about this. This was specifically referring to the federal grants that we just voted on in the consent agenda, which were the federal grants. They call them STIC grants, and I can't remember exactly what that refers to. But one of the things that we did learn from Dwight Mengel, which I just wanted to share with everybody, is that typically there's a certain amount of money that is given to small communities and small cities. And there have been some small cities that have been identified because they behave more like a large city because of their density, their tremendous amount of transportation services that they have. And so they're evaluated on a six-factor system. And depending on where the municipality scores on those systems, you get extra money. So our Tompkins County Area Transit actually gets $800,000 extra above and beyond the base of what the community would get. What he pointed out to us, which I thought was really important, is that if at any point the federal government does decide to take away the STIC funding and redistribute all of the money that's given federally across the board to municipalities for this type of funding, we would lose a significant amount of the funding that goes to our municipality because we qualify due to our density and high amounts of transportation needs in our community. So I thought that was a very helpful thing to note, something to keep in mind as these come down the pike in the next couple of years. He had said he had heard rumors. He has heard rumors of it being removed. So if that does happen, this is probably something we would want to bring up to NYSAC, I suspect.
I think it's small transit-intensive cities or something like that.
Thank you, which is what STIC refers to. And that is my PDEC report. And so we have one resolution, and I would ask this resolution, which is Resolution N, for Amanda to move this resolution.
So moved.
Would you read the title of it?
Appropriation from Contingent and Authorization to Execute Contract for Funding Community Science Institute to Perform Harmful Algal Blooms Laboratory Testing, pending Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, ID 7987.
Can I have a second? Deborah, and this is a short roll call.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
All in favor? Moving on to the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Mike Lane.
We will be meeting on August 14th. We'll be talking about our direct report surveys that you all participated in. We will be talking about the appointment to the TC3 board. As we know, there are two of them, actually. There's a reappointment and also that's been requested, and also a new vacancy for a three-year term. We've gone back to a process that we used a number of years ago, which was very good. I think we got a lot of commendation for it from not only from locally, but from TC3, the fact that we opened it up for people to look at and didn't just do a quiet appointment, but rather to see who's interested and who's out there. Thanks to Marsha Lynch, we found the original press release, and we
It was really pretty good. I helped write it, I have to say. But we put it out again, and Marcia cleaned it up. If you know people who would be a good fit for TC3, the person that we appoint needs to be willing to spend the time, needs to be willing to go to meetings, not just the board meetings once a month, but their activities, their committees that they need to go to. It takes the right kind of person who's interested in students, interested in financial issues, interested in academics. And so if you know folks, get them to download one of our advisory board applications and send it in. And we'll be looking at what we get at the budget committee and probably do some interviews.
Any questions for Mike? Thank you, Mike. Leslin for Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
Well, you've already heard my report. So stay tuned for word coming out from county administration as we try to schedule department heads and legislature retreat to or advance to department heads and legislature advance to get more information about the results of the climate survey and to talk about next steps.
Thank you, Leslin. And is there someone here to talk about the housing committee? Is that passed to you, Mike?
I guess it would be passed. We have not met. We are going to meet in about a week, so really no report.
So next Monday. It's coming Monday. Public Safety Committee, Rich John.
Thank you, Anna. The Public Safety Committee met August 1st, and I thought we had a very good meeting. We covered a lot of ground. We had a report for the second quarter of the reentry program. This is a program where somebody from the mental health department, who's actually in the jail now, is working very hard to connect people who are leaving the jail with programming. Whatever it might be, whether it's housing assistance, it's job training, it's mental health counseling, drug treatment, to try to make sure that we are getting people into services that they might need to get on a better pathway. And it's really early, and it's hard to tell what the ultimate impact of this program will be, but so far it's really encouraging in terms of uptake. And you know, stay tuned on this one. It seems like this is something that could help us make a difference in our jail population in terms of people not coming back. And with that regard, we had some discussion about the overall jail population. As most of you know, and maybe at home, we lost a variance from New York State at the beginning of the year. We had the ability to house 18 people in double bunks. And the state took that away from us, lowering our total jail numbers from 100 down to 82. And that was one of the big concerns for us, is that we were going to have to board out a lot more people. And board outs mean we take people out of the community, away from their family and their lawyers, and put them in an adjacent county. And at the same time, we're also spending a lot of money to do it. So it's bad on different levels. And we're not entirely sure how this is happening, but our jail numbers are down to the point we're running 1 to 2 board outs, maybe 3 or 4 some days, but our numbers are substantially lower. And so this is really good news in terms of financial costs, but also the impact of board outs on the people in the jail. And so we spent some time talking about that. We're also talking about following up on the work of the Jail Study Committee, where this was a temporary committee looking at what do we do about the jail. And one of the things that really came out of that was this jail was built in 1986. It has not had a substantial capital program since then. And it's pretty clear that we are at a point we need to do some things in the jail to
improve the medical facility, the kitchen, and also to make sure that there's adequate programming space for the different programs that are going on at the jail now. This is a pretty complicated series of questions we're asking ourselves, and this is going to be a long-term examination. At least it's going to take some time to really get to the bottom of this, but we're starting that investigation, which is a good thing. And so at any rate, we had a good meeting. And I would end with one other point that we discussed at the meeting, which is that in prior years, we always had a bump in our jail population in July. And it was year on year. We would see this. And it was directly connected to grassroots. And I want to commend the people who are running grassroots, because they have really worked hard on supporting that event in a positive way, and we did not have that this year. And that is a real accomplishment. We have a lot of people coming to our community from far away to attend grassroots, and the vast majority of them just want to come and hear music, but a certain number have traditionally gotten into criminal trouble, either near the event or in the community, and that did not happen. So, good job. And I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. I think there are a lot of people in the public who will really appreciate hearing that. Thank you. Any other comments, questions for Rich? Moving on to Health and Human Services, Shauna Black.
We have not had an HHS meeting since our last legislature meeting. The next Health and Human Services meeting will happen Monday, August 13th at 5 p.m. Please make note this is not our typical time. We are moving it back an hour. The topic for our HHS meeting will be an update from Jason Molino, Jonathan Wood, and Reverend Ken Clark on the Office of Human Rights. Also, we are in the process of accepting applications for the Human Rights Commission. After the review of the Office of Human Rights, we will then consider making placements.
Thank you. Any questions, Rich?
I don't have a question, but I realize I forgot to mention something. If we could go back to public safety after Shauna is done.
Any questions for Shauna? All right, going back to Rich.
I did want to mention one other guest we had at the Public Safety Committee. We had Mary, and I can't remember her last name, from the Ithaca City Police Department, who came in to talk about the community service officer, Tammy Baker, who does work on and around the commons area of the city to help connect people that need help with various things and to work with the police department. And this officer just came in to say how valuable that service is and what a great job Tammy Baker is doing. And in that regard, she has been working with a colleague, Ellie Kirshner, who is about to go off to Harvard Law School. And I wanted to wish him well and commend him on the good work he's done as a community service officer as well. So, thanks.
Thank you. So we have Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna.
Thank you. We met on the 19th of last month, and basically most of what the meeting was about were resolutions that were passed on the consent agenda. The one exception was a review of the highway capital project. And that's my report.
And Transportation Committee, back to you, Mike.
Transportation Committee has not met. We'll meet again on September 7th. Do want to indicate, however, that is the day that the new president of our community college is to be inaugurated, Orinthia Montague. Hopefully folks have been getting their invitations to that. And I think it's the 5th, a couple days before that, is the 50th anniversary of the college. And I think we'll be hearing something about what they're planning for that.
Great, thank you. Is that an event that is open to the public?
I believe so. I haven't seen the details of it yet, but we'll try to keep everybody informed.
but I wanted to alert you.
Great, thank you. Government Operations, Dan Klein.
Thank you. I will start by moving Resolution M, Creation of Historical Commission and Adoption of Bylaws.
Second, Mike Lane.
Okay. Mike, do you want to take it from here, actually? And I know that somebody also wanted to make an amendment, so either or both, whatever you'd like to do.
I'll just give a little background similar to what I did in committee. Thank you, Dan. We've had a group of people doing things about history, and I don't want to at all shortchange our Tompkins County History Center because we've had people from them on our groups. We did, for over 5 years, we had the Civil War Commission, which did a lot of things to commemorate the sesquicentennial of the Civil War as it related to our area. We also, when that ended, it became time to have a group that was a commission about our bicentennial, which we had in 2017. And that has just kind of slowly faded away at this point. But what the Bicentennial Commission said to us was, you really need to have an advisory board commission. It doesn't have to meet every month, but it ought to be there for a sounding board for the county historian and for the legislature on all kinds of things that may come before the county. It could be historic designations, it could be publications, it could be monuments and plaques, it could be various things that need to be brought to the public's attention having to do with history. A good example is this ad, which is now an ad hoc group, has been talking about doing a reading for the World War One 100th anniversary in the fall. And our county historian, Carol Kamen, has been working very hard on a reading based on letters and other things she has from people who participated in World War One. So anyway, the idea came forward that we would ask the legislature to form a standing advisory board called a historical commission. It would be chaired by the county historian. It would have a dozen members to be appointed by the legislature. The county historian and some of the others will get together and help have nominations. It can be people from the legislature like we've had on the two previous commissions. It can be historians. It can be folks that are from different historical areas in the towns, the municipal historians, for example. It can be people who are interested in history and the culture. All of this coming to play with the advent of our new Tompkins County Center for History and Culture. I hate that name. I'm sorry. I voted against it. But people are focusing on history, I think, even more so than they used to. And so I would like to certainly recommend that we move ahead with this.
Any questions, comments, Deborah?
Is this an appropriate time to offer an amendment?
This is perfect time.
Well, then I would propose that we amend this motion to add a clause to the bylaws under Article 2, Section 1, at the end of the sentence that is also the first paragraph. I would say plus 12 commissioners, comma, at least one of whom is a county legislator.
Is that friendly?
Could we say shall be? That's what I had written down. Just sounds more bylaws-y.
A friendly amendment to my friendly amendment.
It's friendly to the seconder.
All right, so now we're working with the amended version.
At least one of them shall be.
At least one of them shall be a county legislator. Legislator, you have that? Okay. Any other comments or questions? All in favor? Any opposed? We're voting on the amendment because it was friendly. Correct. And that is zero opposed. So that passes. Any other comments from GEO?
Yes, I have a couple of things to report. First of all, we had...
Hold on, we have a question. Anne?
Just a point of order. Did you just say we were voting on the amendment? You meant
because
the resolution?
Because it was friendly. It was
voting
a friendly amendment
amended.
To the resolution. We voted on...
So we're voting on... So we voted on the resolution.
The amended resolution.
That was amended.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear. You said we were voting on the amendment.
We were voting on the amended resolution is what I said. Regardless.
It's done now.
I voted on the amendment.
You already did it.
It's good. I think it was relatively understood.
Dan, you just gave us your firstborn, Annie.
Okay. So I just wanted to mention we had withdrawn Resolution K, which has to do with changing the income limits for certain exemptions. And we did that probably not out of disagreement with the concept. It had to do with the memo and the numbers, and it was just a little unclear. And since it's not timely, it doesn't need to be done for a number more months, we decided to pull it, to withdraw it, so we could work on clarity on that one. We talked a lot about changing and updating the administrative manual policies. There are about 100 of these policies, and a lot of them have not been looked at in many, many years. So there's quite a backlog of policies that need at least looking at and possible revisions or changes or eliminations even. And so to start that process, the compliance committee is going to be choosing a number of them, 8 or 10 of them to start with, maybe the easier ones, and going through the process to kind of test run the process of changing or amending or eliminating policies. Okay, so it's a little test run, and we're going to run through all 100 of them eventually. We talked about, the local board of assessment review, and we're considering suspending it for 1 year. Just for some context here, this year there were only 17 people countywide that participated in their local board of assessment reviews. So that involved having 10 separate meetings of 4 hours per meeting, times 2 employees that had to come to each meeting, plus volunteers from each town. So I'm just trying to give you some context of it's a lot of work to set up for a small number of people who are taking advantage of it. So we're considering suspending these local board of assessment reviews for 1 year. I just want to mention that there's still going to be plenty of ways for taxpayers who want to challenge their assessments to do so. Before we go ahead and institute the process for suspending them for 1 year, we're going to take the concept to TCOG so that the towns have a chance to weigh in and say if they're okay with this or if they really don't think that that's okay. They really want to see them continue in their form as that they are. And if we do get feedback from the towns that it seems okay with them, then we'll start the process, which will be a local law that will actually have to amend the county charter. It'll be a very simple amendment, but that's the process that we will do if we're going to follow through on this. Suspending for 1 year is sort of an experiment. Next meeting of Government Operations Committee is Wednesday, September 19th at 9:30 right here. And the only thing I'll mention right now that we'll be talking about is the county website. This is the time when we're going to be presented with some recommendations and vote on them to refresh is what we're calling it, the county website. So again, if individual legislators or anybody else has specific input about what they want to see on a new website, now is the time to give that input.
Thank you, Dan. One thing I also wanted to note, going back to PDEC, that I forgot to mention is there is a change in the time, the normal time. It's usually Monday from 3 to 5, fourth Monday of the month. We have our county picnic, county staff picnic, that Monday from 2 to 6. So the meeting will be from 2 to 4 on Tuesday the 28th for the PDEC meeting. That's the last committee meeting report.
Mike?
I just want to make a comment on Dan's report. Yes. Thank you, Dan. On the policies that we're going to be reviewing, and everyone, when you're up to your eyeballs in tedium reading policies, blame Jason.
Yes. We're very excited. Very excited about
Trickle
this.
Trickle them in for us a little bit over time. That would be helpful. No fire hoses.
All right.
Thank you. So I would like to move the minutes of previous meeting, July 17th, 2018. Can I have a mover? Shauna? A seconder? Leslin? Any comments or questions? All in favor? Any opposed? That is a unanimous support. And there is no unfinished business, so a mover to adjourn the meeting. Deborah, seconded by Henry. All in favor? We are adjourned.